I leave here, down the road to the town, flat out, give everything I had. I'd give everything. All he was in me, I'd attack the bike and go and search it. I'd search up that mountain. I searched. I had no team. The world living against the world. It's a power game. Attack is the best defense of attack after attack. I was thrown out of home. I was a refugee from around the Ross. I was living in a lair in the woods. See, I was a different breed, see. I just attack and go away from the bunch. Nobody else in Ireland could do this. Attack after attack. I know now about I'm missing. I was the greatest solo rider in Ireland. And I searched. Defend the yellow mantle!
Actually, when you consider about, you know, when a goal goes in or what.
This is Mick Murphy.
Hey, Mick.
How are you doing, Mick?
I call you Hard Man now, because...
Are you ready for the road?
The Iron Man, the Clay Pigeon, Mile a Minute Murphy, and...
We were known the convicts of the road, the riffraff of the road, the hobos of the road.
A convict off the road.
And come here, Mick. Were you famous?
Oh, yes, I got a great write-up in the papers. Funab didn't win. You could feel the journalists, you could feel the writing, they were unhappy. They gave great stories, see? They described me the day I got the railway jersey as the 24-year-old cycling dynamo. Castlemaine County, Kerry. They said, I'd never seen anything like what Eddie was doing.
I don't know where I first heard of Mick Murphy. It might have been in a pub somewhere or on a building site in London.
Is it going to rain?
Probably.
It's giving rain anyway.
Can we park the car on the mountain?
We can park up now by the side of it.
I don't need any...
Today is the 25th of May and Mick Murphy, acrobat, fire eater, strongman, street performer, bricklayer, spalpeen, and most of all cyclist, is going back for the first time in 46 years to the place he made his name, the Ross.
Tis. Do you know that place, the Mom?
Well, I raced him places about four times.
The stories I'd heard about him had mostly got to do with his win in the 1958 Ross.
Do any visitors know since we were here last, Mick?
It's said he trained with weights he made himself from stone.
See? The reason now I don't want... See? For those people calling, you can do nothing. You get me.
He lived in the lair in the woods in North Cork.
I wouldn't be able to do nothing. Oh, yes, I'd have to put it on.
He drank cow's blood.
Are you all right there now? Do you want to straighten up a bit or anything?
He rode for 4 days with a broken collarbone.
No, I'm great.
Yeah. He made a living as a circus performer, balancing ladders on his chin.
So come here, are you excited about today?
And eating fire.
Oh, it's great, see, because, you know, do you get me? Yeah.
Come here, we'll head off somewhere, right?
Oh, yes. But listen,
there's sweat in this story.
The smell of stale sweat. And I had that in my mind as well, see, that after a day's training, you know, sweating mad, I'd cut a little piece of it, of the shirt, and I'd put a bit of a rag around me, and it'd be reeking with sweat, and I'd keep that, and the day of the race, I'd put it on, to have the smell of stale sweat. See, without doing these things, you wouldn't be there, see. You wouldn't stick it, see. You know, the awful things you're doing to yourself, and something must help you up.
And blood, too.
And I went out and got blood. I saw a little pin I filed down. And you tap the cow's veins, as you kept the horses in Cork. And cows were quite anyway because they were being milked. And I tapped the vein into my drinking bottle. And to stop the blood, you just squeeze the vein, it hardened. No trouble. The Africans were doing it 2,000 years ago.
This is Mick Murphy's house.
This house was a Romney house. But I turned it upside down. I brought different culture into it. And Now it's called a chicken shack. I copy the style. You see the style of the sale of this house? You know, from the Americans. The chicken shacks, all the famous film stars and singers were around the chicken shacks. So now...
He has no mementos from his career as a cyclist, apart from a few grainy, photocopied newspaper articles.
You see that bag?
Yeah. There must be 20 blocks of cheese in there.
Yeah, about 26 as well, 30. But that'll do me for, I'm on about, say, half a block a day. I'm not, see. That'll last me about, pass that bag there.
There's no running water in this house. Light pours in through the door. It's cool inside today out of the heat.
You see that bag?
And feels as if outside were part of the house. There's little in here except a table, two chairs and a radio.
Come here. Look, here you are. Bring that.
What is that?
Orange.
You are. I thought it might be blood.
Kieran.
The windows and door, which is always open, are covered with galvanise. Mick Murphy moves slowly on two homemade sticks. He's 73 now, gets no pension, and doesn't venture out much.
They thought I gave him the trees when I went up to Dublin. I didn't ever went, but I had a lather in my chin when I was a kid, and it built up and it built up.
Still, he's barrel chested, and the upper half of his body is very agile.
I was a spalpeen.
Listening to him, I sometimes think of the hum given off by electricity.
Kill me here. I said to myself, don't only kill me here. I said, I'm going. Following in the tradition of the spalpeens that hired out in the hiring fairs of Castle Island and Newcastle West to the rich farmers of Limerick and North Cork. And that's where I was. I was a spalpeen when I went to Cork. You know, I was a spalpeen.
His face belies his ears. He's quick to laugh. It's easy to imagine the boy who began balancing ladders on his chin at 7 years. The man who lived in a lair in the woods for a year before the 1958 Ross, training obsessively.
Because a lot of people know about my gymnasium in the woods in Bantir. And now the Ross is coming. On Thursday night, I decided I'd dismantle my gym. My home. I hit the half under wets. My gymnasium was two half under wets inside and a crowbar and a wire to hold them around the crowbar and 228-pound weights. And I was the strongest ever I was a week before the Ross. See, things go for you in the weights. I was frightening myself what I was doing. I was getting heavier and heavier with little bags of sand.
The man on the bicycle who'd seized control of the Ross on the second day.
The big guns were roaring. And no matter who was in front, I was there. No matter who was in front, I was in front of him. And an Australian journalist wrote, he said, I was like, I didn't go on the prowl, he said. With the work rate of an Australian sheepdog. First of all, they were talking about the stupid rider. I could hear him talk, you know, stupid Kerry man. They were afraid of me. I looked around and Tipperary was dismantled. Dublin was dismantled. They were scattered. Mangan was there and Ahern was there. And I attacked and went clear and went over the mountain down into Carrick and Soar. After 2 miles I went clear. And a guy came up to me, we went round the bridge. He rode out to a car, McKenna's going to get you, he said. And I upped the pace in the middle of the bridge. And I rode into the Marble City, Kilkenny, at tapping 30 miles an hour. I said that to the paper next day. What it said was, I can reminisce all most of my racing backwards by starting the end of the stage, at the end of the race.
Who still remembers the third day, the stage from Kilkenny to Clonakilty, as the day of the common bike.
And I was like Martin Luther, the reformist. He was hit by a flash of lightning. I had doubts about myself. When I was started, three times I came down. Now I was defending. I was in yellow now. I had a yellow mantle. My free field went. The springs went. And looking back, the bike I rode, the horse, which was 10 years old, a banger. And they were saying that I was unmanageable. They put me out in that. And I had a ball tire. And I was told in London, you weren't worth a tire to carry. I didn't do much thinking in my racing life. My legs didn't think for me. I had one style attack and keep going till I could go no more. I was down. And I started running. I was around a mile. The ones that passed me, they'd climb up. They were gone now. I was watching and I was running, bent over, a hold of my bike. I was around more than a mile. And going through Glenmire village or near it, across the road came a herd of cows. And by the time I got to it, two cows came out and the farmer after it. And he was holding the bike in his left hand. And I remember now, I can see myself now, I left the bike down so gentle. And sprinted and jumped, and I was on the bike. A big, awkward-looking girl's bike. And it was gone before he could... The bike was gone. And I was pedaling furious. The same Australian wrote, they said his instincts governed his reactions. I was scared now. Fear took over now, see. How would I make it? Cork City, would I get lost? And all of a sudden, I thought I'd raced in Carrigaline a few weeks before, turned right, followed the trees. And there the Charlies were in groups, you know, because I told them I should get my food there in the evening, see. And so I'd go into Cork and do my circus acts in the street, Cork City. And I'd give them the food. They knew me. I'd give them the food. They, you know, and they said, you're ready for me. Because they saved me times training. They see me and they recognize me. And they started to scream. And I never have made it before them. The time I had lost now, see, and the effort I had made was coming at me. I rode out of Cork City into West Cork. And there's a climb out of Cork City, going to West Cork. And you can see a viaduct, a railway viaduct, black bricks. And the last of the bunch disappeared. The Charlies were roaring me. They were shrieking me on. The Charlie were the three traders of Cork, the women. When my head rose to the mountain, I found it was going strong. And I could tell by the four blokes that disappeared over the mountain, I was gaining. And I started to climb strong and solid. And I could still hear the Charlies shrieking. I came over the top, and I was 46 miles to go. And I roared along the 46 miles. And in the Ulster and Clonakilty, the finish, they must have had a long sprint, because there was great men up there, Carl O'Reilly of Dublin. He was Irish 100-mile champion and 50-mile champion. Ben McKenna was there. The William brothers Dublin were there. And I was passing everybody. And I finished seventh, I think. Another 100 yards, I have got it. And the Charlies screamed and shrieked. They shrieked me over the mountain.
This is the stone gym where Mick Murphy still trains.
That's the gymnasium now, look. This thing here, you see. And when I started off, I probably had two and a bit of a stick and two weights smaller than that. You see the ones under the bed?
Yeah.
You imagine how whatever my mother taught me.
They're pallets, basically, are they?
Yes, pallets. Look.
He first learned about weightlifting from the strongmen in the circus. In the 50s, the training he was doing set him apart.
See, I've loaded up.
You made all those out of concrete yourself?
Out of concrete, simple as...
By the time he came to ride in the 58 Ross, he had incredible upper body strength.
What now?
Yeah.
There. And for the neck.
Do you put that around your neck, is it?
This contraption for strengthening his neck he devised himself.
What weight is that?
Oh, it's not much. When your feet are going to do three times that.
And you make up that strap now and all for your head yourself?
Yeah. You know? Go out like that.
And you hang that off your neck.
Like I am now, here now. See, look? You see the weight of that, the push that put in your neck.
And how much weight is in that now? That piece of concrete hanging.
Oh, it's about 20 pounds.
This is enough too. And where did you make them out the back here?
Oh, I made them now. The other ones I made for I was a child. 1946.
Day 4, the day of the body snatchers.
So now, coming up, there's a climb up out of Glengariff into Kerry. And I came down the road at 50 miles an hour, and Dan Ahern was with me. And he roared at me, "Don't break." I could feel my hair standing in my head. I crashed at 50 miles an hour. And it's called delayed reaction. I was concussed, definitely. I was gearing into space and looking at my bike, and Mangan stopped in front of me. And he gave me a slap across the chin. "Get on it," he said, "get on the bike." I got on the bike, I went around the bridge, and I bugged him to this day. I caught him so easy. That fall cost me dearly, the king of the mountain. I'll get you to this day. The next thing I remember, I was coming over the bridge into Kinmare. And all the riders were looking at me. Asking me, was I all right? And the bloody team chair came up again and gave me sponges to clean the blood off me. Jesus, I mean, I was riding the Ross. I mean, the blood made no difference. But they must be thought that they would get them waiting for me inside the tree to look well. but I knew there was something wrong with me. I didn't know if it was wrong with me. I didn't know I'd crashed. And I knew there was something not right with me. And I started lifting my hand up. Maybe it was sore. And I knew if it was wrong with me straight away. That would save me. I could catch the bars good enough. Now we took on Moll's Gap. And I attacked again in Moll's Gap. See, they judged me by my sprinting powers. I had none. But in every mountain, I led every mountain from start to finish. Maybe sometimes they got beaten. I shall lead stages from start to finish. Control the race and go away clear. Be clear for 50 miles and get caught. Maybe 2 or 3 minutes up. Go clear again for 30 and get caught. So it's the breakaway rider and the mountain rider that wins the Tour of France. The sprinter never win. And coming near the top, Seamus Devlin Tyrone attacked and took us out. And I was roaring at the others. See, I thought now I was King of Ireland. I said, "Why did you leave him go?" And looking back now, I laugh at him, you know, that cheek, you know. And over the top now, I went over the top, down the big fall into Killarney. And now I was thinking I'd be attacked, you know. I was going to be attacked. No, attacking means cycling. A guy, he'll come from maybe 20 yards behind you and he'll flat out and he'll pass you. Cycle racing is about attacking. I decided I'd attack before Killarney. And I jumped clear. I led through Killarney and they caught me in the grotto. And Dublin attacked in waves. They attacked in waves all the way to Tralee. And with every attack, I could hear them coming in the in the slush of the water. They attacked in waves. And I went to the attack and jumped away myself. And I went to the attack, David. I made one and come into Ballyseedy. I knew I was safe. And about a mile outside the town, I stood up and on the handlebars. I saved the day.
You must have been in pain that night.
Took me to the hospital. The Dublin Rooks were jeering at me going into the lead, trying to dismantle me. They were trying to dismantle me. That, oh, here, forget about him. The medical school, he's right to the body snatchers. See, the Dublin Rooks are awful blackguards. Good crack, you know, good enjoyable crack. Up into the hospital, but secure. And out in my mind now, see, I was half concussed. I must have been. As I was catching 50 miles an hour. They wanted to get me on the x-ray table. But they knew what was wrong with me. You know? Got to see that bone, look? Feel that? It never goes back. But they never gives any trouble. You see that one? I do that wrestling. I broke the tendons in my two ankles wrestling. And fractured my leg. And you could hear the crack out in the road. And they went to hospital. They wanted to get me on the operating table. And they came out with a sack. And now I froze. I was definitely going to be sold. In my mind, see? And they kicked out and latched them. I was sitting down on the floor. And they got me onto the table. And they caught me in the sore arm. They pulled me up on the thing. And they put me a sack in them. And I crashed out. I ran from the window. There was a big high window. It was opened up. About 6 feet, and I leapt over the bottom 3 feet or 4 feet of it, out into the street.
Day five, the following day, they strapped him to his bike.
I dressed up in the morning and went downtown, and I was in an awful state. I stiffened out, see. And I went into a shop, me and Donna Heron. The lady inside the shop said, there's something wrong with you. I said, I'm in an awful state. I said, I'm fit for the grave. And tried this, she said, giving me I'm going into the kitchen and getting a loose water. And she threw to my shoulder and she gave me a holy medal. And I swear to this day, I wouldn't have started but for that. But Lucifer was waiting for me. They led me onto the bike. So when I go over the bike, I can remember it now. And they tied in my toe straps. They tied me onto the bike and they put my hands in the bar and they pushed me off. And it was in an awful state. I swear Lucifer was waiting for me. And I started off like a machine.
You had a brother, did you?
I had a brother. He joined the Cistercians. You know the Cistercians? In Mount Melry. He'd on the way from home. And he was sitting down there. There was a chair down there near the table. And they were taunting him to go. You know? He was about 14 years old, 15. And what they were saying to him was, I was going to get up and attack him. And I was about 12 or 13. The one prison brother, he was saying, what are you going to do if you're grown up? You'll be a fool around here. You know, to make him go, see? That was an awful thing to say. And he went, and he cycled there. And he cycled back. And whatever happened there, I don't know. He left. I was ill. And I opened the door by chance, and there he was outside, afraid to come in. And he died in about a year after. He wasn't right. See? But I blamed after with the cycling back. How did he eat in the way? See? Didn't he eat, see? And we discussed sport, and he was a great, strong lad, you know, strong lad, see. But I took the belly out of the house. The truth about it is, he took the belly out of the house. I don't think my father wanted to work anymore. See? But I went up to bed to die. But he died. I went up to bed to die. And I know my mother didn't know what I was doing there. And she got mad. Whatever happened, I came out. I took the belly out of the house. But I can't stand death anyway. I wouldn't go to funeral. I wouldn't have a job to go to funeral. But that could come from, say, I-13 crashes. I took the belly out of the house. The beautiful butterfly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't get them and I put them out because I don't want to die, you see?
Yeah.
They're coming for the sun. They're beautiful things.
My butterflies are beautiful, yeah.
And you know what they were doing last Christmas? It was raining out, a big frog came in. He was trying to climb up there. So I put him out gently. And the next day, if I came up into the room, only his wife. She said, they're fine there. See, I was working for the horses in a... Oh, yes, there's another story I want to tell as well.
About the convicts of the road.
Oh, the convicts of the road. In the first man to win the Tour of France was Maurice Garden, an Italian. And his father sold him as a 7-year-old kid to chimney sweep for a bucket of cheese. And I was a real convict of the road. I slept at Hay Baddens. And I look in the quarries and the bogs. I went all over. I throw my coat in the street, I go there and start my axe, and I get half and half a response. And for ever going to France, I tried to go to France. I came out Mayo, I'd never seen a map. I thought it was all straight through. And
are you serious about that?
That's true. What did I say that I'd going to next?
You were going to go to Sligo.
Oh yes, I'm going, oh yes. But I said, no, I'm going to something else.
The story about the ghost dog.
One night coming up, before 1960 Ross, a big dog, at 2 in the morning, came up from under my wheel. It made no sound, it was whitish, like a ghost, and trotted up the side of the road for 50 yards with me. And I got scared, and I sat down in Goulden's door, outside of the road in the wall, and it got light. Two weeks later, we were coming into Turles, and I did battle with the Dublin men about 2 miles from the finish. And we saw a big dog coming out of the field, a big monster of a dog, and panicked. It was ready to pass. And now the Dublin blokes, the funky rider again, the Dublin blokes, the hard men, they all held back. And I went straight for the dog, and I was just passing when he jumped. And his hair brushed my face over to the other side of the road and away. And the double blokes roared, "The dog's like you, Murphy." And I said, "Murphy." See? So now we came to a bridge and I'd gone clear now. And I could see down in the river the dog, his teeth glaring to come up. And I jumped off the saddle. Now I was gone clear. My chain broke. I went 3 feet above the bike. I completely somersaulted. And landed in my back. I was badly cut up. And it cost me stage win. And to this day, I believe it was the same dog. He was going back. That was awful weird. No, it was a ghost. It was a ghost. There was no dog there. I mean, the things do happen. But now back to Sligo.
You have a great view from up here, Mick.
This is brilliant now. That's a great view down. You can see him coming a long ways.
Yeah. This is the Maugham.
It's not as hard as Cumbuchister. I've been up Cumbuchister.
It's the last big climb on today's stage of the Ross and lies between Castle Island and Listowel.
Come here, Mick. When was the last time you were at any Ross?
1960.
And why did you choose today to come back?
Just choose what?
Why did you choose to come back today after 46 years?
Well, you asked me.
The only reason.
Yeah, oh, I wouldn't have come up at all for that. Well, see, people like me don't know a lot of sport, but I followed religiously in the radio and the papers, you get me? Oh, you know.
Mick has been up on this climb many times, but we're early.
A sadistic streak in Dermot Dignam, I think.
So it's back to Sligo, where Mick Murphy falls for the third time.
I got up. and I fell back down again. I got up three times and fell back down and headed off. And I suppose I was gone half a mile, I suppose. And I seen a big bunch of riders come against me. And I didn't think about it. I was confused, I think. They were shouting mad forward. I'd go back the way I came.
You were going the wrong way.
The wrong way. So I obviously concussed, you know. And the next bunch blocked the road and turned me around. And I had to get off the bike. I can't remember now. See, I was ill. I was hurt. And I headed off and we were inside in the cuddlers. And I was in bad shape. I got hungry. The hunger knock in my head was down below the crossbar. I was gone. The car came up and gave me food. And I was starting to climb solid. But now I was long ways behind, see. The jersey was gone. I lost 7 minutes with all this carry on. There was sizes getting shot off the back going up the mountain. And usually you want to wait for these guys. You don't look at them. You keep going because they're weak. Maybe I needed friends now to help. I was a weak in my own with nobody to talk to. We raced over the top. They were trying to get to work with me. And down the mountain in a squally, dangerous evening, rainy evening, we raced up the mountain, down the going to the side. We raced up the mountain, Russian roulette. There was a bloke, and he roared, "Defend the yellow mantle!" He was roaring. I was roaring along, and they never got beyond my pedals. And we heard him echoing to the mountains. We were gaining heavy. And he roared, "Defend the jersey!" He was telling the blokes for me to defend the jersey, see. But in the way into Kilkenny, when I got the jersey, he roared at me as well. He said, he was the bloke that roared at me. He had a kind of reddish jersey, whatever team he was with. Maybe 2 or 3 more miles further on, we could hear him. It was weird and eerie. We could hear the roar. He couldn't see us, but he was hyped up. And we came in sight, and we all roared laughing, you know, in the middle of the road. And it was 3 something. I was back in yellow. And I headed out into the country. I swear the little calf came to me. It's for blood. And I got blood off of 2 of them. And I went up to my room. And I wrote in my hand, "Attack in the morning," inside and out. And I was shown my room.
You went up to your room and wrote "Attack in the morning" on your hand?
In my hand. "Attack in the morning." And I pulled me some wallpaper during the night. Out, and I wrote up for that seat in every direction I went, "Attack in the morning."
All over the room.
All over the room, "Attack in the morning." "Attack in the morning."
Hello.
That's John Reedy.
Are you the man from the Kerryman?
I am, yeah.
I couldn't have survived without Castle Island. I called the little cow town. I'm not in fun territory at all.
Here's the car. It was raining on the Mom, and the crowds had begun to gather. Yeah. Come on. The leading riders drew level with where we were.
Come on, keep it going. It's just up there.
You see the bunch together, they drive each other on, see, you know, it's very hard to stay in front of the bunch. Even to talk about the race now, it makes you tired. Yeah. I mean, just imagine to get it prepared to race 1,000 miles, it's an awful thing. Flat out. Give everything I had. Everything was in me. I attacked the bike and go in searches. Everything I had.
The final stage. Mick attacks in the morning.
Riders rode on by.
Every half a mile or a mile, I was pulling to the right.
That was because of your shoulders.
My shoulders, see. I was pulling on the strong side, was taking me across the road. Because I had no way to this side. Nobody will get any mercy. I was attacked non-stop all week. Because I attacked blokes non-stop. I was getting lonesome. And I seen a road sign, Dublin 79 miles.
Across these endless skies.
9 more miles, I'd be halfway. So, about another 30 miles or so, the car came up and said, Mangan is coming up. He left the bunch and he came up. Word came up, the crossroads outside Dublin, that Steve Abbott was coming fast. He was getting his Dublin taken over. And now I didn't want to sprint finish. I could still crash and still get messed up. And I started attacking, long attacks. And I had him reeling. And Mangan came up to me and he said, are you going to do this to me? He said, are you going to drop me? He said, after I give you my bike. And I stopped. I couldn't ask the man. He gave me his bike. He did an awful lot for me to get me. I eased up. So I paid Mangan back for giving me the bike. And I had him one more attack and they were gone. They were wobbly. I got gone away. And the sprint started. I finished fourth. There was only one link to it. I was the Ross Talton winner.
Word spread that the Iron Man was on the road.
The first man to win the Tour of France was Maurice Gann, an Italian, in 1903. His father sold him as a... Hello, Anthony. How are you keeping?
1957 and 58 and all those years. The Castle Island ACC.
That was the most famous club in...
People lined up to shake his hand and have their photos taken with him.
I told him...
Dan Hurton, I was just on the road with Dan.
Hi?
Dan is just above here.
Is he?
He is indeed. I was walking down the road there with him now.
Ken, come down.
I will. Dan?
Dan?
Mick? This is a man from the States. This is the famous Mick Murphy now, Jim.
Hello.
He came over to the States to see the Ross.
Come up here, Mick Murphy. This man rode for Kerry in 75 with Eamon Breen and them.
What's the name?
Tim O'Sullivan. He's a Castle Island man. He'd be a cousin of Timmy Sullivan.
Hello.
Mick Murphy, Tim Sullivan.
Yes. Is Mick Barris still around?
He did.
And Jackie Connor?
As well, yeah.
He's not, is he? Jackie Connor.
This is Dan Ahern, who won the first stage in the 58 Ross.
How are you, Dan? Jesus Christ, you're looking
Mike
great.
Mike Murphy, well, Jesus.
How are you keeping?
No, this was a sightless, if there was ever one.
Well, you were up there yourself, well there.
I'm not kidding, no.
How are you keeping?
It was the greatest sightless I ever rode against in all my life. Yeah.
We had some hard battles.
Oh, yeah.
We had some hard battles.
When Mike Murphy had got to make a break in his bike, all you'd see was the bike warping. Just the same as a bit of paper bike.
Strength.
But we raced up this. Bike. It was in. We raced up this road. Remember that?
You mean we chased you up here? And he bought a mile in front of us. Tell him there about when you joined the Kingdom Cycling Club in Tralee.
Oh, that's when we out of there.
The Tralee fellas told you. Don't leave the bunch, Murphy, until we tell you. And of course, Mick, big smile. Yeah, I'll do that. Mike went out the road the first hill. He opened the gap in him. Right? What did they do when they finished the race? You were in 10 or 15 minutes in front of them.
They threw me out.
Yeah. But you cleared the hole. They attacked you, I think, didn't they? And you cleared the whole bunch of them.
Oh, yeah. There was a scuffle going on with... 30cc and the Kingdom. But I was addressing it.
That's right.
I won that. The milk and the cream if I'm for.
I should have won all round at that time.
But you listen, come here now, about the Kerry team. Sure, we had no Kerry team with us. They were all kids. They were too young.
But the thing is, Mike, you were too far ahead of the rest of us in here.
I will not. No, no. But I know. I'm bringing that now.
Do you see this fella coming on the motorbike?
Yeah.
No. Reminds me. Chase him in a bike now. and 'twas like chasing Mike Murphy long ago. Oh no, I'm not joking, Pete. Watch this, look. You just had the very same chance of catching him now.
What is it now?
Yeah. Can you see yourself on the bike, Mick?
I can. I can. I climb a lot faster than them. I do a lot more powder than.
Mick doesn't go out much anymore.
It's like he's a circus. It's a circus.
But he seemed reluctant to leave the mom that day.
Where would you be today here if you were cycling, do you reckon?
Oh, I reckon that I'd be long ways in front, but in the mountains. I climb a lot faster than that. See now, see, I'd sit in the saddle all the time. And just.
We were there until the last car had departed. And then, as we turned to go, two shapes emerged out of the mizzle back down the climb, their bicycles arcing from side to side. Each turn of the pedal sending jolts of pain like electric shocks.
Go on, lads, keep it going.
They're still there, Mick said.
You're doing well. You're still there. Defend the yellow mantle.